Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On the program today, an anti-vax tax.
They put a very important burden on our healthcare network. And I think it's normal that the majority of the population is asking that there be a consequence.
Why is Quebec slapping a healthcare tax on the unvaccinated, as the Quebec Premier announced today? How much would the so-called significant financial penalty actually be? Is it legal? Is this a slippery slope for taxing other citizens, smokers? Will other provinces follow suit? We'll dig into the controversial new proposal. We'll get reaction from Quebec's opposition leader. MPs will react. And then, surveillance society. Did the Public Health Agency of Canada invade your privacy when they collected cell phone data to fight COVID? Can the data be used for other purposes? Did the government take enough safety precautions to de-identify it? The opposition is calling for an investigation. We'll find out why when MPs join us to debate that. Plus, safe at school?
We are taking every step that we can possibly take to make sure that our schools are safe for our children to return to.
Ontario and Manitoba send their kids back to classrooms on Monday. What's changed? Are students and teachers at risk, or are they now safer? We'll bring the president of the Canadian Medical Association for her view. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players.
It's a question also of fairness for the 90% of the population who made some sacrifices. I think we owe them this kind of measure.
Okay, that's the premier explaining this tax on the unvaxxed. It's happening soon in Quebec in a matter of weeks, according to the premier. Unvaccinated adults who don't have medical exemptions will face what they're calling a healthcare contribution within weeks. Premier François Legault made the surprise announcement today during a press conference that was following the resignation of Quebec's medical chief medical officer, but he was short on details about what it could be. What could it look like? Could it face legal challenges? We begin the coverage with CTV's Montreal bureau chief, Geneviève Beauchemin. First of all, great to see you, Geneviève. The Quebec government says unvaccinated Canadians will be hit with this health care contribution. What do we know about it?
Well, there's still a lot of details to be worked out, Evan. What we heard today is that he's working on this. He's consulting with the Minister of Finance, getting legal advice on this, on exactly how this will work out, because, you know, this is something that hasn't been done here in Canada. So it's something that he says he has to look at very closely. But, you know, in recent weeks, the Premier of Quebec has been getting a lot of pressure to do something about the unvaccinated. He's been speaking out more forcefully against the unvaccinated. You know, last week, he imposed those new measures where, as of January 18th, those who don't have a vaccine passport won't get access to the province's liquor stores, the pot stores. And now he's coming with this contribution, as he called it, the anti-vax tax. So many people have now called it. He was careful to sort of code it as the healthcare contribution. And we just don't know how much that will be. In that same news conference there, he was talking about the fact that he wanted it to be a significant amount. He was asked, would $50, $100 be a significant amount? He said that in his view, that wouldn't be a significant amount. So we're expecting quite a bit more than that, but just how much, that's just still not clear.
How will it be paid? Does it paid when you go to the hospital? Does it get paid on your tax form? What kind of reaction is this getting?
Yeah, those are interesting questions. He was very careful to say that he didn't want this to be a thing that those who unvaccinated go to hospital and have to pay some fee at the hospital. That's definitely something that he says wouldn't be the way that things should be done in Quebec. He wanted it to be on all adults who are unvaccinated, all those, of course, who don't have a medical exemption. So there is a lot of reaction, a lot of people looking at this issue. There has been, as I said, a push here from several columnists, people in the province here talking about the fact that there had to be something to be done because, you know, you talk about the disproportionate burden of the unvaxxed on the healthcare system. So the stats today show that, of course, as he was saying, as the premier said earlier, 10% of the population only are non-vaccinated, and they represent 45% of ICU beds right now here in the province. And that has been so for the last few days. It's been oscillating around that. So a disproportionate burden on the healthcare system. And many people have been calling for something to be done, but there's a lot of questions, a lot of people talking about the legality of this. And, you know, we don't want to set up a two-tiered healthcare system is what many people have said. Now, as I say, he doesn't want to do it at the door of the hospital, but still there's questions, a lot of issues, a lot of questions are being raised about just how this could unfold.
Well, that announcement came on the heels of the resignation of Dr. Horacio Arruda as the public health director, and he said there's been an erosion of trust, and now you've got this. So lots of action in Quebec. CTV Geneviève Beauchemin, you are going to have a busy time tracking all this. Geneviève, great to have you on the program. And we'll get more reaction on this in a minute when Quebec's provincial opposition leader is going to jump on the program in about 6 minutes from now. So that's great to get reaction rolling in live on the program. Now, could more provinces follow Quebec to mitigate the rise in hospitalizations? Let's get some national reaction. We now are joined by the Premier of New Brunswick, Blaine Higgs. Great to see you again, Premier, and I hope your health is returning. Boy, this was a bit of a jaw dropper. I don't know if you saw this coming. As a fellow Premier, what do you think of Quebec's plan to tax the unvaccinated because they're taking up a disproportionate amount of space in the ICUs?
Well, certainly the fact that that is the reality, that there is a disproportionate space being used is real. And we have to do something to address the unvaccinated. You know, we purport a mandatory vaccination policy a while back in the legislature. It didn't pass. That case was for schools. But I think that across the country, you know, we're seeing the same thing. And we can't go through one pandemic after another if this trend continues with people not getting vaccinated and the cycle repeating itself. I do agree with Premier Legault that the vaccinated are getting tired of their lifestyles being so interrupted, and by 10% of the population, which is pretty consistent across the country, that just refuse to be vaccinated. But I think it is a slippery slope to start looking at charging, you know, for health issues, because then it could move into other categories of health. And then the public system, as we know it, becomes eroded. So we have to consider how best to make this happen. But the fact that it's got to happen is real.
So let me just drill down. Would you ever consider some kind of financial penalty for the unvaccinated?
Well, we haven't considered a financial penalty, but what we have considered, and we, you know, have done that through the implementation of different levels of our changes in access to public venues, would be making more restrictions in regarding to people being able to move freely in the public without the vaccination. We have done that, and we will continue to look at that if we could see this problem within hospitals. And we are seeing it now, and to what extent, I guess, over the next few weeks will certainly tell. So we would be prepared certainly to do that. And we've seen a reaction. We've seen where people, you know, something they normally would do, all of a sudden they can't do it, whether it's be attending a hockey game or whether it's be going to particular restaurants or in Quebec, they changed for the cannabis stores and alcohol. It made a significant impact in people's desire to get vaccinated. So it does influence behavior to have further restrictions.
So you've got, by the way, hospitalizations very much on the rise in your province today. So you've got a big capacity issue and a surge capacity issue. I understand that. Because this is so interesting. Quebec has done this. They're calling it the anti-vax tax, and however they end up rolling this out. But you're saying that amongst premiers, the situation is so dire that this is a discussion that you're, whether it's the exact same thing, you're ready to enter into discussions to have more, I guess, punitive measures on the unvaccinated who are eligible but just won't take it.
Well, I think that we have to, and it has to be a national issue because, I mean, whether it be travel restrictions, which have become significant, which I already know are at play. Yes, I'm prepared to have those discussions, whether it be on mandatory vaccinations or whether it be in relation to further restrictions that would be more uniform across the country. I think we just have to be careful in relation to directly related to health. Not that I don't think people should have an obligation to look after their health, but when it's impacting other people directly as this is, and their access to health care the way this is, because of other services they need in the health system that are being stopped or changed or delayed, then you have to say, well, 90% of the people can't be wrong. And we have to find ways to change that.
Okay, just in the last minute, I've got you. I know you were on the call with premiers and the prime minister yesterday. There's some concern that the federal government said, look, we're happy to help you in lots of ways, but if you want help from, let's say, the military or the Red Cross, we just don't have that kind of capacity to help you give boosters, and we may have to essentially triage who gets help when. Has your province requested help, and how would that roll out?
Well, that is true. They don't have the capacity. Like what we're looking, our situation is now within the hospital system itself. And so they don't have healthcare workers in that capacity to deliver. And that's so we are being able to keep up. We're asking people now. We have appointments available for vaccinations. So we have room there. We can manage that ourselves. We are in good shape in that sense. It's just the rate of people being out of the hospitals in terms of contacts or having the virus. But I've gone through this myself. I've had COVID. I'm fully vaccinated and the booster as well. And it was more like a head cold for me. And you know, I think that people just need to follow the rules, get vaccinated, and we'll mitigate our exposure and to limit right. and follow rules in terms of limiting exposure to each other. It's not that difficult. And getting vaccinated is a huge big part of it. And we feel we can manage. Our healthcare workers have been stellar. And at this point in time, our hospitals are increasing count about 80 at this time, but it's manageable. But it's not easy. We're delaying a lot of things in order to achieve it.
All right, I got to leave it there. Really interesting reaction to what's Quebec going, and you really realize the problem for healthcare systems is very similar across all the provinces. Premier of New Brunswick, Blaine Higgs. Premier, great to have you back on the program. I always appreciate that. We're going to return to that story now and get some reaction in Quebec. The anti-vax tax, how will it work? Will it face legal challenges? The Quebec government not available for an interview. We did ask all day, but the Quebec Liberal leader is. So joining us now is Quebec Liberal leader Dominique Anglade. Glad. First of all, thank you so much for joining us. What was your reaction to the premier? Premier Legault, he didn't give much detail, but he floated this idea of the healthcare contribution, or as we are now calling it, the anti-vax tax.
Well, first of all, we had a meeting today, as you know, that we had Dr. Arruda resigning from his post and raised a number of questions. So we're very thankful for the work that Dr. Arruda did. And at the same time, we want to know how the decisions are going to be made in the future within the government. Regarding the idea that was brought forward, the problem is we don't have any information. We don't have any data. It raises a number of questions in terms of application, in terms of what do you do with vulnerable population that can't pay? What do you do with from an ethical perspective, the questions that it raises up? And we don't have those answers. So it's really a debate that should happen at the National Assembly. And we've been saying this to Premier Legault, the importance of having the debates at the National Assembly with the opposition leaders.
But are you philosophically opposed or open to the idea that at this point, given the healthcare situation and the overrepresentation of the unvaccinated in the healthcare system, are you philosophically opposed or open to the idea that they would have to pay a financial penalty, that they are going to be taxed?
There is no question in my mind that we all along we've been saying that we wanted to have consequences for the people that don't get vaccinated. We went as far as saying that we wanted a mandatory vaccination for the employees, for the public sector, for the employees working for the state, and a number of things around the passport, the vaccine passport implemented in other areas, and also the deployment of rapid testing. So we didn't go down the path of saying that we should be taxing the population. However, again, in order to have the right answer, we need to understand what is it that is on the table, what is the idea, what are the implications, how much are we talking about, and the efficiency of the measure. Is it going to really help us get the non-vaccinated vaccinated? We don't know that. So this needs to have a real debate and not being discussed in a press conference without any substance behind it.
Yeah, we have very few details, but he has thrown this idea out there, and the shrapnel is being felt everywhere. All right, Quebec Liberal leader Dominique Anglade, great to have you on the program. I really appreciate your reaction.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay, stay with us. Privacy in the pandemic. The Public Health Agency of Canada collected 33 million Canadians' data over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, and they're planning to keep it up. Was this surveillance an invasion of your privacy? Does the government even have a plan to keep your data safe? MPs are standing by to debate that next. Stay right here with Power Play. Welcome back to Power Play. Did the pandemic lead to a surveillance society? Well, get this. In order to track the spread of COVID, the Public Health Agency of Canada collected 33 million Canadians' mobile data, and they plan to keep doing it for the next 5 years. The so-called anonymized or de-identified data has been used since the start of the pandemic. The data collected was supposed to be, as I said, de-identified. That means no personal information was collected, but they've never really revealed the protocol for how the data got to them and what protocols are being used to actually protect it. Can the de-identified data be re-identified? That's eminently possible. Still, in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, the provinces were quick to tout this data about who was staying home and who was defying stay-at-home orders. And Veronix Analytics even mapped out Canadians' location data to get a better sense of who was leaving their homes and why. And back in April 2020, Google released a blog post explaining it was sharing anonymized data with public health officials to show exactly how busy certain locations are. Finally, the Public Health Agency of Canada, PHAC, never even bothered to consult with the Privacy Commissioner about their program. But CTV's Power Play did reach out to Canada's Privacy Commissioner, Daniel Therrien, and his office just told us this, quote, "We were not asked for advice as to whether the means taken by or on behalf of the government provided adequate safeguards against re-identification. The government relied on other experts to that end, which is their prerogative." And his offices now say they are examining the complaints they have received in order to determine next steps. So what does this mean for you and your data? And why are opposition MPs demanding that the Ethics Committee investigate? Let's find out. Joining me now is Greg Fergus, the Prime Minister's Parliamentary Secretary, John Broussard, the Conservative ethics critic who's demanded that the committee sit, and Matthew Green, the NDP ethics critic, who also has joined that committee. Gents, first of all, Happy New Year to all of you. Mr. Ferguson, the government accessed 33 million Canadians' iPhone data without their knowledge or consent on the promise that the information was de-identified. Does the federal government have a protocol to make sure there is no way to re-identify the data? And if so, what is it? Mr. Fergus?
Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me for that. The microphone just broke down, or the earpiece did. Regarding your question, the information is de-identified, depersonalized. It's not, there is no data that could be track to any particular person. Matter of fact, I would even characterize it that would be a mistake to say that they collected data on 33 million Canadians. What they did collect it is aggregated data, which is depersonalized. No way that it is can be tracked to any particular person. No way you can re-engineer it in the back ways to try to track people. And it's really important.
Okay, sorry, can I just stop you? Because I know they've said that, but I did speak to Ann Cavoukian, Dr. Cavoukian, the three-time privacy commissioner, and despite that assurance, she was very concerned, and she said what protocols were followed to make sure the information cannot be re-identified, because that's key. There's lots of ways to de-identify and re-identify. So can you be specific what protocols were followed to make sure the information cannot be re-identified?
Well, Evan, I'm not an expert in terms of the protocols which are used on privacy information, but I've been reassured in terms of the number of questions, and I look forward to the opportunity to be discussing this at Ethics Committee for us to be able to ask the Privacy Commissioner. From what I understand, the folks from the Public Health Agency of Canada had been engaged with the Office of the Privacy of the Privacy Commissioner with the purposes of saying, look, we have this de-identified data. Is this appropriate? And from what I understand is that they said, well, there is no way that you can bring this back to make it But just to be clear, they
didn't go to the privacy commissioner, and we don't know if that's true. You're taking the word, but there's no transparency. The privacy commissioner wasn't consulted. So you're saying you don't know the protocol, but you just trust the private resources that public health agency use without really knowing what the protocol is. Is that fair?
Well, I wouldn't say it. Well, I mean, I guess you could say that, and I wouldn't phrase it in that way. And the reason why I wouldn't phrase it is because, you know, Evan, a lot of the stuff that we do is based on the discussions that you have with folks. And then you know that when you ask specific questions, you get answers. This is why if Mr. Broussard and Mr. Green and others wish to have a discussion about this at the Ethics Committee, they will be pushing against an open door. And so we'll be happy to have that meeting to ask these kind of questions, to get into that kind of detail, so that all Canadians can be reassured that the government is doing its best to combat the pandemic and using science and information available for us to do so.
Okay. Mr. Broussard, does that reassure you at all?
Well, it's reassuring, Evan, that Greg says that it will be an open door, because that's what we're asking for. This started off as a secret. You know, we didn't know, Canadians didn't know, that unless they did a deep dive, as you said, into Google earlier, that public health officials were actually tracking the mobile data of 33 million Canadians. And so, you know, why weren't they open and transparent if this was such a good thing right from the start of this? So there are several questions that need to be asked, not the least of which is the secrecy in which this occurred. But secondly, the request for proposal to conduct this type of surveillance for up to 5 more years. The request for proposal was put out December 17th, the day after Parliament adjourned for the winter break, and is closing, scheduled to close, on January 21st of this month, leaving very little opportunity for any parliamentary oversight, any questions to be asked by parliamentarians. And the committee will have a lot of work ahead of it in order to get these questions answered. I don't, based on Greg's response today, I don't have very much confidence in the fact that the government perhaps was even aware of what was happening, and perhaps PHAC was doing this on their own. The de-identified data that they assure us was de-identified can be re-identified. There's lots of evidence out there. So what security measures were put in place, Evan? I think these are extremely fair questions. And who made this decision? A lot of the data that PHAC is wants out of this can be readily accessible through public health agencies right across this country. If they want to find out where people are moving, whether they're going to hospitals, they can do that. If they want to find out what the status of the health status are of individuals, they can access that data through public health and through hospital organizations. It's already readily available. I can't understand for the life of me, Evan, why they would need to track and access 33 million Canadian cell phone data. It doesn't make any sense, unless, of course, it's just this continuous overreach that we're seeing from this government, with numerous examples of where they're moving on and infringing on the privacy rights of Canadians. And I will say that for many Canadians, since this story came out, this has been a line in the sand in terms of government overreach, and they're fed up with this type of overreach.
Let me get Mr. Green. What questions do you have, sir, when the committee is struck about where the data came from, maybe about the re-identification issue, maybe about the how well it was protected? What are your concerns?
Well, I think, you know, to begin with, you've raised, I think, what might be the most important question, which is about protocol. It is often the case in this type of mass collection of data that there are protocols under the guise of national security, which would have oversight mechanisms already kicking in. We don't know that to be the case with PHAC. We would have to totally underscore that this is an intrusion on the privacy of Canadians who deserve to know what kind of information the government is collecting and plans on collecting on them. We're calling on the immediate review of the use of cell phone data that the government collects on Canadians and the kind of information that they're able to obtain from Canadians in their analysis in order to ensure the privacy of Canadians is respected.
Okay, there's lots on this. We're going to pick it up when the committee is struck. But just quickly, because of the news in Quebec, I'll just go around. I'll start with you, Mr. Fergus. What do you make, and what is the federal government's response at all, to the Quebec proposal that they would slap a tax on the unvaxxed because unvaccinated people take up a disproportionate amount of healthcare resources in the pandemic, and they're considering a, quote, significant financial penalty on them, a tax? Mr. Fergus.
Well, I think all Canadians and I think all folks will say that the way we know the best way to combat against the spread of the virus, of course, is through science and information. And the best way to do that, of course, in the science that offers us is to get vaccinated. If we want to make sure that the spread is not there, I encourage everyone, please, get vaccinated for the first time if you haven't done it. Get the booster shot if you've had your other two vaccinations. I've done it. I think it's important for everyone to do so. But in regards to what my home province has done, this information that was announced by Mr. Legault just earlier this afternoon, he has promised that more information is going to be coming forward. For me to be able to offer you a real informed sense as to what this is, I really have to wait until we see how he's going to operationalize this. But I certainly can appreciate that all provincial governments are trying to do their level best to making sure that they're protecting their residents. Let's just see if this is an appropriate way of doing it.
Mr. Broussard, any reaction? Provinces now prepared to slap a tax on the unvaxxed?
My afternoon, Evan, has been spent dealing with this public health agency issue and doing multiple interviews across the country. I haven't had an opportunity to digest it, but I was asked about the state of public health yesterday. You know, Canadians are fed up. They're tired with the constant lockdowns and restrictions. We've had 2 years. We knew that surge 3, 4, and 5 were coming, wave 3, 4, and 5. I would question what the federal government has done to prepare from an ICU and a surge capacity standpoint to make sure that our hospital system is prepared to deal with. And I think the federal government needs to work with the provinces to deal with this issue more wholesomely. So I haven't had much time to digest it, Evan, but that's what I'd have to say.
And fair point. And you know that the provinces are in charge of their own healthcare systems there. Mr. Green, just
absolutely.
Real quick on that.
Health transfer.
Yeah, real quickly, we are definitely interested in approaches that work to get people vaccinated. We believe in public services like healthcare have to be available to everyone. The science is clear that the more people and children that are vaccinated, the better chance that we have in fighting COVID-19, which is exactly why we've been calling on the federal government to use any and all available resources, including the military, for a massive public vaccination campaign for children and other people not vaccinated.
All right. Listen, Mr. Fergus, Mr. Broussard, Mr. Green, when that committee meets, I hope to have you back as we follow that issue of healthcare information and cell phone data. Really important one. I appreciate it. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks. Looking
forward to it. Thank you.
Coming up, we'll pick up this Quebec proposal to have a slap a tax on the unvaxxed.
Those who refuse to receive their first dose in the coming weeks will have to pay a new health contribution.
New health contribution, tax, we'll call it what you want, should they do it. Is this a slippery slope? Will other provinces follow? The press gallery is going to follow this next break. Stay with Power Play.
We're looking for a health contribution for adults who refuse to be vaccinated for non-medical reasons. Those who refuse to receive their first dose in the coming weeks will have to pay a new health contribution.
Quebec is getting even tougher on the unvaccinated because they say they're overwhelming the ICUs in the hospital system. Today, the premier, as you just saw, announced that adults without medical exemptions will soon face what he calls a health care contribution that will be significant. It's really an anti-vax tax. Details not finalized. The premier said the dollar figure, as I said, will be significant. All provinces are stressing the importance of vaccinations. The rapid rise in hospitalizations due to Omicron variant has many governments rethinking their pandemic playbooks. Now, Quebec has gone the farthest. They've got a curfew. As of January 18th, you won't be able to go to the SAQ, the liquor store, or buy cannabis unless you've got the vaccine passport. but this is a much bigger stick. And does it send a message? And is this a slippery slope for maybe taxing other people? People are saying, what about smokers? Will they be taxed? Let's bring in the press gallery to talk about this. Bob Fife is the Globe and Mail's Ottawa Bureau Chief. Fatima Sayed is a reporter with the Narwhal. She's also the host of the great political podcast, The Backbench. And our special guest is David Hertel. He's a counsel at Fasken and the former Quebec cabinet minister. We also have Dr. Catherine Smart, the president of the Canadian Medical Association. This is a good panel. Okay, great to have all of you. Let's start in Quebec and get your read on this. David Hertel, what do you make of it? What's the fallout? What are the implications of this?
Well, remember, and you noticed this at the opening of the show, Evan, that the first story of the day this morning in Quebec was last night's resignation of Dr. Arruda, our public health director. And the press conference was called last night at 1 p.m. today, and everybody thought that the discussion would be around Dr. Arruda's resignation and the public trust in the government's decision managing this fifth wave. So great shift, right? Because right now the number one story, not only in Quebec, but across the country, is this anti-vax tax. Also this morning, there was a Léger poll that came out showing that in the last 2 months, the Legault government lost 14 points in Quebecers' support of its management of the fifth wave. And this is unheard of for this government since the beginning of the pandemic. They've always been in the high 70s. Now they're at 65%. So this is also damage control. We're less than 9 months away from an election in Quebec. And this is the big, big play because, yes, 10% of the unvaccinated are generating 50% of the hospitalizations. We had, before this fifth wave, we had 800 COVID beds. We're at over 2,700 hospitalizations, Evan. The system is completely broken. What it shifts the attention away from that fact. 70,000 healthcare workers in Quebec aren't showing up for work right now.
Yeah, so this is a what they used to call in politics, wag the dog, maybe. We'll talk about that. Let me get a healthcare view from Dr. Smart, and then we'll get the political reaction from Fatima and Bob. Dr. Smart, what do you make? We all know the stats about the overrepresentation of the unvaccinated in hospitals and ICUs. We know the stresses for the system, and you can outline that. What do you make of this big stick, tax the unvaxxed?
Well, I think it just really speaks to the crisis we're finding ourselves in the healthcare system. You know, we really have two things we can do. We can increase resources to meet the surging needs in our hospitals and meet the needs of all the patients who have not been able to access care throughout the pandemic. But we don't really have that as an option in the short term. We have no more resources to deploy. And as we've been hearing, we have the resources we do have are struggling to be present due to having COVID themselves or being off on isolation. So that's not really an option right now. The other lever is altering public behavior. And one of those tools is trying to use whatever you can to increase vaccination. And I think the fact that Quebec finds itself here also just speaks to the fact that we're getting a bit, you know, struggling with how do we get that final percentage of Canadians vaccinated, and the approaches to that are getting more intense.
Bob, you want to weigh in on this? I was pretty taken aback by it. I haven't seen this one before.
Well, I mean, we shouldn't be necessarily surprised by this. We do have pretty hefty taxes on cigarettes. This has been going on for 20, 30 years. The taxes keep going up because people who smoke and get cancer are drain on the healthcare system. And so governments at all, provincially, have been putting pretty heavy taxes on cigarettes. And this is, to the doctor's point, this is a mechanism to try to encourage a small percentage of Quebecers, 10%, to get vaccinated. And I think it's legal. I've spoken to a number of senior federal judges who say to me that this is a legal measure. I don't think there's going to be a legal challenge on this. It would be different if they tried to deny health care or to take to the non-vaccinated, or for example, to take away their employment insurance. But this seems to me a serious effort by the government, which is the issue in Quebec is because there aren't enough healthcare workers now because the system is overtaxed. It's less about the issue of ICUs is just that they don't have the staff anymore.
Well, Fatima, it's interesting because I know we've heard the sin tax or they tax cigarettes. This is different. This is two Quebecers are trying to get the same health care service, but one has to pay something for it because they didn't get a vaccination. I don't know about the legality of it, as Bob said. There's a debate on it. What do you make of the politics and what the message of it?
I think it's a dangerous precedent that the Quebec government is trying to set, especially because this seems like it should be a last resort measure. I mean, the Quebec government hasn't even done all the steps that people have been asking for, which is, you know, recommend stronger masks, put testing everywhere, go out and communicate with the unvax, which aren't just, you know, we have this image of them being like, you know, very strongly opinionated, unreasonable folks. But there are members of the unvaxxed, I'm sure, that are just people who can't access vaccinations because of work, because of education, and so forth. There's a lot of steps that need to be done in between before we just add a financial burden to some of these folks who might just be struggling to understand vaccinations and how to get vaccinations. And I think that's deeply concerning.
David, what about the legality of this? Will this get challenged?
Well, it probably will get challenged. We'll see. I mean, today during the press conference, Premier Legault was asked, do you have any legal opinions on this? And he shifted it away. The fact is that right now it's more about making this announcement. And he just said, well, you know, my finance ministers are going to come in a few days or maybe a few weeks and talk about the details. He had absolutely no details to give. So what he's doing here is shifting the attention and trying to channel that population's anger towards this situation being locked down. And it takes the attention away from a lot of missteps, perceived missteps over the past few weeks and months in the management of this fifth wave. We had 5 million rapid tests gathering dust in warehouses. We've had same day changes in certain restrictions, testing. We just heard about testing. The fact is we don't have enough people for testing. On December 2nd, we were going to close a big vaccination center in downtown Montreal while we knew something was coming. So there's been a lot of missteps, the Christmas gamble, not imposing restrictions until December 26th. So there's a lot of these questions that now have completely shifted away by this announcement towards looking at this issue about taxing the unvaccinated.
All right. Let me take a break. David, I really appreciate you joining us with your perspective. You come on back. And of course, Fatima Bob and Dr. Smart, we're going to stick around because we're going to move into the other big issue. There's that. And there's getting students back to class on Monday. Much of the country, Quebec, Ontario, and outside a lot of the western provinces, they're coming back to school. But have governments done enough to ensure that schools are actually safe? The politics of the school return next. Stay with us.
The government's guidelines make no sense whatsoever, and it seems to me that they're more interested in creating chaos than they are in creating a sense of confidence around the return to school.
That is the reaction from the Ontario NDP leader, Andrea Horvath, to the Ontario government's announcement that school's back January 17th. The Canadian Medical Association is calling for governments to work together to minimize the impact of the current COVID-19 wave and the rise in hospitalization. And the call from the CMA is to ensure governments make schools safer. But in-person learning is resuming in Manitoba, Quebec, and Ontario on Monday. Will parents be sure those governments have actually made classrooms safer? Press Gallery is back. Bob Fife from the Globe and Mail, the bureau chief there, Fatima Syed, reporter with the Narwhal, and Dr. Catherine Smart is back, president of the Canadian Medical Association. Dr. Smart, Ontario saying we've got HEPA filters in classrooms, we're providing masks for teachers and students. Do you think, have they done enough to make sure schools are safe for students and teachers?
I think we're definitely seeing things move in the right direction. I think one of the things that's been so challenging around the school conversation is it's been very polarizing. You know, are schools safe? Are they unsafe? The reality is it's a continuum that reflects disease activity in the community. And really what we want to be seeing is governments putting in place as much as possible all the structures that can make schools safe as they can be. So that means prioritizing vaccination for kids 5 to 11, making sure teachers are vaccinated and boosted with their third dose, N95 masks, excellent ventilation, and limiting time that children are not wearing their masks. And those are the strategies I think that we can have in place to make sure that schools can be as safe as possible for our children.
Fatima, what do you make of this? Ontario said we've used this 2 weeks to re-up the schools. Did they? Should this have been done earlier? What do you make of the things done, if there are any metrics, to figure out if schools are actually safer now?
Unfortunately, the track record doesn't speak volumes in this case. So I understand when parents are deeply skeptical and worried with schools opening around the corner. I think we need proof. We haven't had a government or the Minister of Education, quite frankly, appear at a press conference and clearly communicate with parents and with students and teachers and educators what exactly has been done to create safe schools. And that's what's creating deep frustration in the community. The government has said a lot. We haven't seen evidence of it. And until we do, I think parents are going to be on edge, which is just an added burden for everything they're already facing.
Bob, what do you make of the politics of first they're coming back, then they weren't coming back, then they were going to protect, then they weren't going to protect. What's your take? These are consequential issues, by the way, that may have massive impacts on an upcoming election.
You're absolutely right on that, Evan. There was a real failure on the part of the provinces and the federal government, for that matter, but particularly on the provinces to prepare for another surge from Omicron. They didn't have N95s in school. They didn't prioritize booster shots for teachers or shots for children. They didn't have air filters in schools, which they could have done over the summer months. They closed down in a panic the schools for a good reason. One can understand that. But there was such a backlash from parents who have just had it with the fact that their kids are stuck at home, and it's having an impact on parents and their jobs, and also on the mental health of students. So I think the government probably, some polling in Ontario and Quebec, they're facing elections, they've realized that they better reverse this and have people back in schools on Monday. Now, the education minister of Ontario, Stephen Lecce, says, we're going to have N95s now with students. We're going to prioritize vaccinations for students as well as teachers, and we're going to bring back retired teachers that can work in schools if people are off sick. He says they're going to do this, but will they do it? Because the track record of governments at all level has been one of failure.
Yeah, and they could have done that, as you said, a long time ago. Here they are into it. Let me go back to you, Dr. Smart. It's really interesting. The school system is saying we got to hire retired teachers to come back. And then you've got the nursing issue in the medical community. In Ontario alone, there's something like 15,000 people, nurses, that don't have their licenses here because they got them in foreign countries. And there's a nursing shortage. Is there a way to boost the staffing in the hospital system that may allow us to make sure that, if anything happens when we open the schools, the system's ready?
Well, I think we heard today from Ontario that they're looking at a pathway to bring internationally educated nurses into the system, which I think makes a ton of sense. We are so short on nurses, and the nurses that we do have just been worked to the bone during this pandemic and experiencing such significant burnout. And now, of course, many of them are off work because they themselves have COVID or they've been exposed. So certainly bolstering our healthcare system with nurses who are available is going to be very critical over the next few weeks.
Yeah, Fatima, I don't know if, at this point, are governments realizing that restrictions and lockdowns, even with the numbers on the healthcare systems, are getting increasingly difficult to justify because there's been so much confusion?
Just because you put pause on a problem doesn't make the problem go away. We've been off for over a week, but the number of vaccinated kids between 5 and 11 hasn't exactly increased drastically. Schools are not reporting huge supply increases in masks or ventilation systems or so forth. The government has announced a lot of intentions, but we're not actually seeing it happen. So when schools open, it's the same unvaccinated kids going to the same exhausted educators indicators, and the situation is entirely the same. Nothing's improved, nothing's changed for the better, and we can't just say, oh, it's going to be fine this time around, because again, the track record shows that it hasn't been. So I'm desperately hoping that things will be okay come Monday, but again, the evidence speaks volumes against that statement.
Yeah, Bob, just last word, because I know there's a Leger poll that said people, you know, are starting to really turn against some of these restrictions. They're fed up. They're done. They've been vaccinated. That's why you have this focus on the unvaccinated. What do you think? Is there a shifting political climate here?
Well, I think you're right on that. I mean, people are fed up of being locked down. I am myself stuck in my house. I'd rather be in the office. But I don't have young children, and that's a very difficult situation for families who have their kids at home. And I think that's one of the reasons why the governments provincially have decided that they better let people back. But, you know, we're still huge lineups, Evan, for people to get their booster shots, which is unacceptable. There's simply been no planning on this, and I'm not hopeful because of the track record of the governments at all levels over the last 2 years, that they're going to get their act together. One hope that they will. We're now beginning, though, to see more and more healthcare experts saying that, you know, maybe we're just going to have to live with the fact that we're all going to get Omicron, and it'll eventually become endemic. That may be the solution in the long term. We're just going to have to live with this and not going to have to be subjected to these kind of lockdowns that we're facing all the time.
Mm. Yeah, although when this peaks and the impact on the healthcare system is the big issue. All right, listen, no one likes to be locked down, but at least we forced Bob Fyfe to put a tie on in his own house. That's kind of good. Dr. Catherine Smart, great to have you. Fatima, awesome to have you as always. And of course, Bob, always a pleasure. We hope to see you all soon and when we're out of this quarantine. And thank all of you for your interest in politics and in power play. Thanks so much for watching. Remember, we want to wish a very happy 88th birthday to Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. Stay healthy, sir. And we'll be back here in 23 short days. Hug your loved ones.